Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a New Day radio show where the dialogue is authentic, host is passionate, and we help you to become empowered, inspired, resilient, and transformed. Yes, our focus is to change our world by transforming one business and one life at a time. Now, here is your host, author, columnist, reinvention coach, entrepreneur, teacher, and speaker, Dr. Daphne Clark Hudson.
Well, good morning and happy Wednesday to each and every one of you. We have an exciting day that's lined up for you. So what I'm going to be doing at this time is ask you to text, tweet, or even call your loved ones because they will not want to miss this conversation this morning. And yes, my honored guests will be joining us from Hawaii. And you know it's the wee hours in the morning there in Hawaii. And for him to decide to join us, you know this is really, really important. So listen, get ready, grab your beverage of choice for the early morning. I'm right here sipping on my hot lemon water, and I want you to grab your beverage of choice because I don't want you to get distracted once this conversation begins.
Some friends you gain, some you lose. In the back of your mind, you're looking for love, but found the blues. That's why I've come from far away, to take away the blues. And I've come to say, I wanna be more than just somebody. I wanna be more than just a friend. I wanna be more than someone special, 'cause special friends sometimes they won't understand.
Yes, today is another special Wednesday when we will be focusing on education, inspiration, and empowering of you, my listeners. I want you to be part of the conversation. We want you to ask questions. We want you to call in. The chat room is open. The telephone number that you can join the conversation is 646-915-8166, 646-915-8166. And as always, we encourage you to be part of the dialogue. Well, today's conversation will be, are you paid what you are worth? Yes, are you paid what you are worth? We know that this is an extremely thought-provoking question for many people. And we would love to hear your thoughts on that this morning. Joining me today is an expert on this topic, so much so that he has written a book. And hanging out with me in the virtual green room is my honored guest, Mr. Soul Dancer. He is the author of Pay Me What I'm Worth, and he is from Hawaii. And again, he decide to join us this morning. It's the wee hours there in Hawaii. And he's just so full of energy and excitement. This topic ignites who he is. And without any further delay, I want to welcome my honored friend, and I might as well say colleague, because we will be doing some things together. And you know that on this platform, we only invite the best of the best. People who have a value to add to you, because I made a commitment to you 6 years ago that I will focus on your education. I will give you inspiration so you can be motivated, and I will empower you so that you can assist me in changing our world one life at a time. And here is an expert who is doing just that for many, many years. So I want to welcome and introduce to you, my listeners, for the first time on this platform, Mr. Soul Dancer. Good morning.
And a gracious aloha, Dr. Daphne. I am delighted and honored to be with you.
Thank you so much. I tell you, the universe is a very, very, very faithful, because had it not been for technology, we would not be in this conversation this morning. And had it not been for the LinkedIn platform, we would not be connected. So I am here to tell people that social media works when you work it. So I want to delve right into the conversation. But before I do that, I want to remind the listeners that there's a special treat for you. The show today will not be ending in the traditional format, but you will be blessed with a guided meditation at the end of the conversation here with us. So at around about 11:30 a.m. Eastern, you will be instructed to enter into meditation. And oh, what a way to end this conversation. So that will be a special, one of the special treats for you. So with that being said, let us get busy. So will you take this time, Soul, to introduce yourself? Tell people as much as you want them to know before we get into this conversation.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, where to begin? I think the best way to start our journey together today is to honor Dr. Maya Angelou, which I learned through the news that she passed away today.
Oh, my Lord, I did not know.
And she has been she's a high influence in my life as a shaman in four traditions.
She is in my mind, too. Oh.
And one of her quotes that is at the core of our journey that we'll be taking together, one of her amazing quotes is, "Nothing will work unless you do."
Yes. Yes. Ooh, this saddens my heart. I respect and honor her work, and I have used many of her material in my work as well. You know, I honor her, and I know the angels are welcoming her home. She has, what a legacy she has left us.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter your culture or ethnicity. She has left a powerful legacy with us, and I
mm-hmm.
honor her spirit. Wow, I did not get the news this morning, so I did not know that. Thanks for sharing that with us, Soul.
Well, it frames our journey together, Doctor, because you asked me to share about me, and my training over 40 years has taught me that it's not about me. It's about the person who is hearing these words. While I certainly can rattle off on a pedigree and background and qualifications and all of that fun stuff, I mean, I can. People are often accustomed to that. But isn't it true, Doctor, that the only person who can make the changes that you are offering them to make is the person themselves, right?
Yes, that is so true. However, and although I deeply respect what you say, it's a practice of mine here to set the stage for people because on this platform, we come from an authentic place, and people need to understand who is delivering. And I find this out. It's like when I come to your home and I visit you, you open the door and you greet me with a smile. And that smile warms my heart and it makes me feel welcome and well received in your home. And I find out that a little bit about people, not so much their accolades, because the accolades means nothing, because, you know, God works with the nobody and makes them into somebody. Even when people sit down and say, oh, well, there's nothing good about me, that's not what Daddy says, because he did not create nobodies. He created powerful people who can make the changes in their lives that they so see that needs to be done. Action, decisions. And there are many people who are not taking any action to make any decisions. They sit down and they point fingers and blame others for the path that their lives are on. And that's why I always ask my guests to say a little something to warm the people's heart and let them listen up and say, well, if Daphne can do that and Soul can do that, what excuse do I have? I need to reach out, stretch my hand to them and let them hold my hand and assist me on this journey called life.
Well, once again, nothing will work unless you do or unless I do.
Exactly.
Background-wise, I have a lot of training. I have a lot of education. I've lived in over 20 countries in my journey to become a monk in three orders and a shaman in three traditions. And this was after I got my master's in social work because I knew academic, as you've experienced yourself, you're mm-hmm. at the doctorate level. I'm only at mm-hmm. the master's level. And mm-hmm. but to me, I don't know. Doctor, you've met people who have never stepped foot into a classroom of any kind are extraordinarily powerful people, true?
Oh, yes. Every day, and this is why I tell people, I don't have any place to accommodate excuses, because that's exactly what they are. Excuses for you to sit on your blessed asset and do nothing. There are many, I tell you something, approximately 3 weeks ago, I was at a conference, and one of the speakers there is a very powerful woman on one of these televisions. And she shared, she's a multimillionaire, and she's touching many lives around the world. And she said she has never gotten any higher grade than a D in school because she was born into a family where the boys were honored and pampered and always encouraged to excel. But she was the only girl in the family, and she was called stupid and she was called dumb. However, she said it was not until far in her adult life that she could really learn, she could really read. She could not read effectively. However, that did not stop her from excelling. So again, I applaud her because she made the decision to work, whatever that means. She did not mention about going to college because she did not. She started off working as a waitress and built her way up. And if she can do it, so can I. And so can you, whoever is listening.
So with that thought in mind, I know you had a question about me right after we started talking. Do you remember what that question was?
What, to tell the people a little bit about you and why you're on this journey?
You had questioned me about my very name.
Oh, you meant the very first time we spoke?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yes. Yes, I ask Saul, why did he choose this name? Because I thought this was a business and a marketing name. And he said to me, you have to ask my parents. And I said to him, you mean this is your real name? And he said, yes, that's what's on my birth certificate. So, you know, this is a conversational name, because people talk about having business, about having your elevator pitch and everything. Your parents gave you your elevator pitch, because it doesn't matter what a gathering you're part of, your name is going to be a conversation piece. Has it not been for your entire lifetime living in so many different countries?
Oh, indeed. And I'll share with you a story it's almost guaranteed. When I travel and I present my passport, the usual drill is the agent will take the passport, they'll look at me. You know, I've learned that you don't generally look directly at agents or whatever, and but they'll look at me and they'll look at the picture, and I watch their eyes look at my face and then look at the picture on the passport, and that's like, okay, you know, that matches fine. And then I'll watch their eyes go from my picture to my name, and Doctor, every single time their eyes go either from my face to my name on my passport or my actual face, their eyebrows go up every single time. It's almost without fail. And I thought, you know, if I were an Indian woman dressed in a sari with your traditional, you know, people know that little red dot that's on their forehead. If I were female Indian in a sari dressed and made up that way, my name probably would not be raising any eyebrows. But because I'm a white male, bald, you know, I mean, it's like they're just always. And so I just basically give them that namaste sort of bow, and then they're, most of them are like, oh, God, he's one of those. And they're like, they hustle through it, and they not often throw the passport back at me. But they're, you know, generally female agents are a little more, they get it. They get the fact that I am actually
so we are
a little
more
different.
Sensitive, you know.
Yep.
Oh, that is too funny. That is too funny. You know, so, you know, we have an exciting time here this morning. And you mentioned about living in so many different countries. Now you are blessed to be in the amazing state of Hawaii, where all the lava and everything is. And you are just experiencing such a life of abundance. What directed you to this path? Because it has not always been this way for you. What guided you to this aspect of your life journey?
Two key pivotal points. The first key pivotal point was a moment where I recognized at the age of 30, I'm 53 now, that if I continued on that journey, that mode of what society calls a successful life, I would most likely be dead by 35. Mm. And I say that because at the age of 30, while I was still in a lot of training, I was a extraordinarily successful business person who at 5'7", close to 350 pounds, Doctor, you can't be 5'7" and 350 pounds and expect to live to 40,
nope.
Right?
That's right.
So the key turning point was sitting on a doctor's examining table and the doctor saying, well, you're about 6 months away from type 2 diabetes, just so you know.
Mm.
And something inside of me said, you know, soul, this isn't your path. And then, ironically, a couple of days later, I'm having dinner with a very dear friend. And because I was in a situation where I was earning extraordinary money, one of my favorite things to do would be to go out to dinner. And when I go out to dinner, or at least back then, going out to dinner means the dinner tab would be at least $400 or $500 by the time the dinner's
done.
Wow. And I made it clear to the people that I invited to dinner that I would always pay the check because I could. I had really, really a tremendous amount of money coming in. And so I invited this one friend to come to dinner. I knew it was his favorite place, and the time came to pay the bill, and it was about $200 and some dollars. And the my friend reached for the check, and I'm like, what are you doing? And my friend said, well, I'm paying the bill. And I said, I thought it was understood that when I invite you out to dinner that I would always pay the check. And he says, yeah, I understand that. And I said, I know you as a public school teacher that this check is like, you know, 2 days worth of work. And I, please, let me buy the check. Let me get it. And my friend took a risk, looked me in the eye, said, Sol, you're more than welcome to pay the check. And in doing so, we will conclude our friendship.
Powerful.
Why do you think he said that? Before I tip the scale with the rest of the story, why do you think he said that?
Because he saw that you were using your money, for want of a better description, to buy his friendship or the friendship of the other people that you were associating with. That is just my brief assessment of it, but I'm sure it's something deeper.
Well, you're on the right path because he said, Sol, when you pay the check, how do you feel? And I, like, looked at him with kind of a deer in the headlights look, and I'm like, well, what are you saying? What do I'm delighted that I can do that. I'm happy. I like you. I like you as a friend. I like our friendship. It brings me joy to pay the bill. And he says, why are you denying me that?
Wow. That is deep. And that is so true, because it's at that moment, I remember at the top of the hour when we said, it's whatever we do, it's not about us. But at that particular time, it was all about you and what you could do. And you were really depriving the others from that same life experience. What a lesson.
Turn the lens around. I mean, in my mind, I'm being a kind, compassionate, generous person. That's what my ego was telling me.
Telling you,
right?
Yep.
It was
but
blocking
what
the fact.
What about the others? You know,
exactly.
We don't take the time to say what the recipients are thinking. You know, in the minds of those people, they're probably feeling deep down that they're always taking a handout. But you never gave them an opportunity to express, you know, what's going on with them. And that's that lesson is invaluable. You know, you could not have paid for that experience any place.
Exactly. Fast forward.
Wow.
During a time when I was on my journey of becoming a monk in the third different order, it was shortly after having a break from that I was entertaining a friend for dinner. And, Doctor, you have to understand, at this stage of the game in my journey, I had lived in an ashram where everything was pretty much taken care of, your food, your clothing, everything. You did your chores. You were taken care of. I really had no money, no income. And when I took this friend out to dinner, this friend, a multimillionaire, I took this friend out to dinner at a very quaint little shop. And the money that I had in my pocket, the whole $12 that I had in my pocket, that's all the money I really had. I mean, at that point, I had divested everything that I had, everything.
All in,
yes. The $12 was my true net worth. The bill for dinner came to $11.98.
Ah, so you saved 2 pennies. You saved something.
I paid the bill. Now, let me ask you this. Doctor, if you knew I had $12 to my worldly name, that's all the money I had. I didn't have any stocks, any bonds, any house, any car, any jewelry, any computers, nothing, only the clothes on my back and $12 in my pocket, and you're a multimillionaire. If you knew that's all the money I had in the world, would you allow me to buy dinner?
No, I would offer to take the tab up. I would say I got it.
Interesting fact, this person had no knowledge that not
That's
only
right.
was I studying to be a monk, had no knowledge that all the money I had in the world was that $12,
mm-hmm.
and he expected me to pay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you invited him out.
Mm-hmm. Perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Perspective is the key. That's what we're going to be talking about in our guided journey at the end of our time together. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
pay me what I'm worth is all about perspective.
Perspective, yes. 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 You know, it's interesting. I have another friend who is a monk. He just flashed up on my board just now. And yeah, it is so true, because the minute you say worth to anybody, I was speaking to one of the volunteers in the studio last night. I had a taping for the TV show, and I was telling him what the conversation was going to be on the radio show. So he said, wow, I should take some time to sit down, and I can probably see what I'm going to learn about my network and maybe how I can tweak that up. And I said, I hope you tune in, because you're going to be pleasantly surprised. You're going to be getting a real awakening. And he looked at me and smiled. So I said, I hope after you listen in, you're going to have that same big smile on your face, because it is really going to heighten your value on who you really are. And it doesn't have anything to do with your money.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrinkled his brow and looked at me funny. But, you know, exactly. You know, what's our perspective in life? And, I mean, each and every one of us will answer that question differently. You know?
Mm-hmm.
But two powerful examples that you have laid down here to set the stage for us to get us thinking, you know. What's our perspective with the last example you shared with us? And, you know, what's your take on the first example? Would you have continued the friendship with the person had you not allowed him to pay the bill and vice versa? How did that make you feel? And this is a question for you now. When he said that to you, I bet you got an aha moment at that particular time, because in your mind, it was out of kindness and love and generosity. You weren't looking that you were depriving him from satisfaction in his life. So what was the immediate conversation after that? I'm back at the first guy with the that said you were robbing him from having that experience.
Oh, I was. You could have smacked me upside the head with a 2x4 at full throttle, and I wouldn't have felt it.
Mm.
I would not have felt. I had never even once come from that perspective. Not once.
That's right.
I was so blindsided. I was numbed.
Mm-hmm. 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 And, you know, That happens to us in life when we don't really have the right perspective about things. And it happens with adult and children too. I mean, parent and children too, because a lot of parents want to just direct the children what to do, and they don't get into conversation and listen. And as adults, we go around doing the same thing in our everyday life. We don't listen. We verbalize what we want others to receive, but we don't listen after we make a statement to them what it is that they have to say. Not, as a matter of fact, their contribution to the conversation.
Exactly.
So, worth has to do with our perspective. And at what stage of your life journey did your light bulb went off and said, aha, this is what it is about. And not only do I need to take this information for myself, but I need to use this to empower the rest of the world.
Well, you beautifully lead me into sharing a little story about how the book itself, Pay Me What I'm Worth, not only came into consciousness, but got produced.
Mm-hmm.
You ready for a little journey?
Sure.
At that time, I was living in a delightful city, Encinitas, California, just north of San Diego. And in Encinitas, there is a connection to a very powerful spiritual place. And I had just taken about an hour's time to do my morning meditations there at the meditation gardens. And I got a very powerful image of one of my first teachers and the sense of gratitude that filled me within to out. I could have filled the Pacific Ocean easily. The amount of gratitude flowing out of me at that, from the finish of that meditation was so overwhelming. I was weeping because I thought how this teacher put up with such an arrogant jerk for so long, thinking, you know, reflecting back upon what I saw in myself back then and realizing now I see it in students that I do now, and they have no idea how arrogant and what a jerk they are, but I just let it go because I know they're in the process of becoming.
That's right. I've been there.
She was
Everybody will evolve.
Yep. And it came to me that if I had somehow created something where I was earning $100 trillion a second for every day of my life going forward, that even if I wire transferred every penny of that to her every second of every day, it would represent one grain of sand of gratitude in the largest desert that we have. I mean, I was so filled with abundance of gratitude. So I went home and I'm like, what was that all about? And in the meditation, it was, the visions were quite clear that I was a rather famous author. And I'm like, okay, right. Sure. Well, I don't know about you, Doctor, but part of the art of visions that I've learned, I've made the mistake that I'll get a very powerful vision and I'm thinking, oh, I need to do this and I need to do this right now. And so I start out on the journey to realize the visualization in this world, not recognizing that, no, this was a seed that was planted and it's not necessary, you know, it's not supposed to grow right now. You've had that happen too, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I'm doing much better that now. You know, I used to be like, you want to take control. Right, it has to happen now. I'm doing much better, and I started doing so much better in 2014 after God sat me down. But not a show for another time.
Yeah, there you go. Well, okay, so along that line, I got a little snippy with my guides, and I just said, fine, if I'm going to be a self-published famous author, then I need a sign as to when this journey is going to begin. And I asked for the sign to be very blatant. I don't want the butterfly flighting in front of me during a sunset while a leaf is falling type of sign. I want, bam, here's your damn sign. Now get busy.
You want a tornado sign of awakening.
Yes. Yeah, I want the 2x4. You know, make it absolutely abundantly clear. Here's your bloody sign. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So I go home, I clean up, and then I go down to my local coffee shop where I would spend half a day with nursing a pot of tea and doing my writing and Scott settled in where I started writing, and I happened to notice someone pass me by and sit down behind me, and I didn't pay too much attention. And about an hour later, I break my writing and time to stretch my legs and refill the tea, and happened to see the guy that sat down behind me, and he was surrounded by a whole bunch of papers. It was clear the person was editing his book.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, looks like you're deep into edits. And he says, yeah. I said, I'm a published author. This is my galley. I got to get this into my editor today by 5. And I said, oh, well, good luck. Wish you well. And let me know how it goes, because I'm here just about every day. And I started to walk on, and he goes, no. I want to know what you were writing, because I was watching you write, and you had something about whatever it is you were writing. What were you writing? And in that moment, I could feel the energy in my spine start to tingle, and I'm like, okay, what's going on here? I've never seen that person in the cafe, and I was a pretty good regular.
Wow.
And so I said to this guy, hey, you know, I'm here every day, and you're under deadline. Why don't you get that done, and we can talk later? And he says, would you quit being controlling?
Ooh.
What were you writing?
Wow.
And it snapped me back to that very dinner where a friend told me that if he didn't get to pay the check, bang. All right.
Ooh.
So I start talking with him, and I said, you're a published author. And he says, yeah. And I says, well, that's very intriguing, because I got a vision in a meditation just hours old that I'm going to be a fairly famous author. And I asked for a sign as to when I should be starting this journey of whatever. At that point, I had never written a book, ever. I'd written a lot of articles. I've written a lot of meditations and poems, but never a book. And he looked at me and he says, well, so what do you want to know about being an author? And I'm like, in that moment, I'm like, oh,
wow.
Crap.
You asked for it. You got it.
Yeah, in spades.
Right there.
You know,
asked
like,
for it blatantly. You got it.
Yes. So fine. We had this delightful conversation. I go back into meditation, and I'm like, fine. All right. I'm supposed to start now. What am I supposed to write? And the vision of me paying my teacher $1 trillion every second came to mind. And I, in my ego, said, well, she's worth more than that. And the words, pay me what I'm worth, came up.
Wow.
And I'm like, seriously? Seriously?
Oh, my
God. Give me a break. Okay, this is 2006. Doctor, pay me what I'm worth. You would think that by 2006, there would have been a book with the title, Pay Me What I'm Worth, right?
Not really, because if you let it go to the spirit is letting it come forth. When is the right time?
True, I agree, but wouldn't it be surprising if you went on to Google or some search thing and you typed in the words, pay me what I am worth, that you wouldn't find at least a dozen different self-help books already published in that title?
Not really. I mean, maybe if you had asked me this question a few years ago, I probably would have thought that. But right now where I am, I know that everything is divinely set up. When and where it is supposed to happen, and through the people that it was supposed to happen. Because this book was meant for you to write. Ain't nobody else that if they had attempted to write it, could have written it the way you did, because it was not for them to do. So it's like The Secret. Before The Secret came out, there was no secret. So I'm sure when you Google it, you did not find anything, because there was nothing there.
Well, I found a few things. I found stuff that people put in newsletters. I found everything but a book, and I thought, odd. Okay, well, what's the source for books? Library of Congress, right? Went out to the Library of Congress, figured out how to work the system, figured out how to search for books and publish books and blah, blah, blah. And the only thing that had a copyright was a song that had Pay Me What I'm Worth as some of the words in a song. There was no book. It was just words in a song. And so I began to go, really? Okay. I really didn't want to be an author. I really didn't want to write a book
the
because every author
part of
I've,
you.
You know, it's that, denial. I've seen it's too
yep.
much work. I don't want to do it. It's not for me.
Not
but something
for me.
Kept
yeah.
itching. Itching, itching, itching. So I thought, all right, I'll write this bloody book if the domain name is available. It's 2006. People have made a living going out and buying domain names and holding on to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in 2006, I went out to where I buy my domain names, and I typed in, pay me what I am worth and pay me what I'm worth. Both
came up
available.
There again, the stubborn part of you start rising again, huh?
I'm like, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap. Okay, fine. I'll buy them. I'll buy the .net and .com and .org and blah, blah, blah. The second I got my receipts for those domain names, I had a rush of energy to the point that I thought I soiled myself.
Oh, my Lord.
Within 10 minutes, I had the table of contents.
Obedience, huh?
Within 45 days, I had a manuscript.
My Lord. And at that stage, what did you say to Saul? Because I'm sure you thought to yourself, look how long I've held myself back, right?
At that stage, I really didn't know what to make of it because the people that were providing me shelter at the time, again, I live a very simple life, and I was literally writing to the point of where they were getting concerned that I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't eating. They're like, no, you're going to take a break and you're going to eat. A couple of times they're like, no, you're going to take a break and take a shower. It's like, ooh, sorry.
My Lord.
I knew that I had to get it edited. Well, at this stage of the game, I had farmed it out to a number of people who were academically gifted, many of them literarily gifted, and they had read it and they had polished it, but I knew I needed to have a professional editor read it. So the guy who designed the book cover, he's a branding person for a large corporation, and I begged him, do you know of anyone who does editing? And he says, well, I have a friend, but she, you know, I don't know, I kind of doubt she'll take you on and blah, 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 and but I'll give you the number and you two can talk. And so I called her and she says, look, I'm really sorry, but I just don't do first-time authors. They get discouraged.
Wow.
They, you know, I don't want that energy. And I'm like, oh, please, dear God, would you please? You know, I begged her and she goes, so send me one paragraph of less than 200 words, one paragraph, and I'll make my decision as to whether or not I'll edit your book.
Wow.
Fine. Well, it's a 233-page book, doctor. What do you send?
My God. Hey, go back into meditation and you'll know what to send.
You're reading my mind. I got to be careful here. Ladies and gentlemen, she's reading my mind. I'm just going to say that out loud now. And so, okay, fine. I copy-pasted a paragraph. I don't even remember what I sent her. 2 days later, she called
That's
me up.
That's right.
Fine. Send me the book. Okay. And I said, well, before I send you the book, how much money and what's the time thing and blah, blah. She says, here's the deal. You'll have your edited manuscript back in 30 days because my way of doing things is I'll read your manuscript from cover to cover and then I'll let a week go by just to let it, you know, compost, just get it in my system.
Ah.
I'll read it a second time and I'm looking for the big stuff. You know, what are some of the big things we need to address? And the third time I read it, I'll read it with a fine-tooth comb so that we get the nitty-gritties. And I said, okay, so in 30 days, I'll have an edited manuscript. And she said, that's correct. And I said, okay, fine. So I send her off the manuscript. I send her off my check. 30 days go by. I hear nothing. And I'm thinking, oh, crap.
My Lord.
I could just see every page bloodied with her pen with comments and this and that. 2 months go by, I hear nothing. 3 months go by,
oh,
I hear nothing.
Oh, my Lord.
And I'm like, I'm done. I'm just, okay, I did what I was supposed to do. I channeled a piece of work. It's out there.
Somewhere.
But it's not fully, it's not done yet. I really don't want to do this. You know, angst. So she finally calls me up on the fourth month, and she says, first off, you're a liar. And I'm like, okay, I've been called a lot of things in my life, but that's not a common one, no. And she says, I've been editing books for 20 years. I know what a first-time manuscript is. I read your book the first time. You told me that this is the first book. This is not your first time. And I said, no, this is my first book. And she says, well, that's why it took me so long, because I kept reading it and I kept reading it and I kept reading it, trying to find what was wrong with it, because you told me it was your first book. She had a couple of major picture items that I needed to address, but it was very easily addressed. But she says, otherwise, it's done. I've never in 20 years had a book that's done the first time through.
And that you knew then that was not written by you. Isn't that powerful?
Totally.
Once you surrender, it gives me goosebumps. It gives me goosebumps. I just want to interject here. I want to remind those of you listening on the telephone and on your smart tablets and all of that, take the time to call in. The number is 646-915-8166, and also the chat room is open. We want to hear from you. Call in. I'm sure you have questions. So call in. Let's hear from you. My honored guest is Mr. Soul Dancer, and he's the author of Pay Me What You Are Worth. Pay Me What I'm Worth.
There you go.
Yes. So back to you. So all those butterflies and everything you were having and all the anxiety for the 4 months immediately just went away.
It went away, and another larger picture came to mind. And this is where we're at now. The larger picture, the larger vision came that this book eventually will be a number one bestseller longer than any other book on recorded history.
Wow.
And I looked at that notion and I thought, well, that's all well and good, but part of the vision is something grander. I'm involved in something, a much larger vision. Every dime I earn is going towards creating something that's much larger than just being a published author. And the larger mission that I'm on is to create something that can help caregivers maintain their health while they're caregivers. Because right now, Doctor, you know that the most largest growing demographic worldwide is caregivers. And do you know that their death rate is going up as well?
Oh, yes, and in every aspect, because they keep tending to their loved ones and they are not paying attention to themselves. So they end up suffering in every area of their lives.
So that's why this book, we take you on a journey, and I look forward. I must confess that the journey that you and I are going to take people on, it is a life-changing journey, and people are like, yeah, so we've heard that 1,000 times before. And based on what you've intuited so far, you have not read the book yet, right?
No, I haven't read it yet. As a matter of fact, it's less than 2 weeks that we have met. So, my listeners and supporters know me that once I make a connection and I am getting better on the obedience part to the universe, because the old me used to make a connection and pray about it and meditate about it and fast about it and, you know, all the things. But then the universe let me know that once a connection is made, I have it under control, and when I say do something, you do something, and this is why now I step boldly into that which I'm instructed to step into. And this is one of those things.
Well, I appreciate that. Intuitively, you know that those who join us on this journey together, we're going to have a wild ride, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, most certainly. Most certainly. So if they're ready for the roller coaster, this is it. I can just tell them, after all that roller coaster ride, they are not going to be dizzy anymore. They're going to be so focused.
So if you'd like, I can take you on a journey through the book, chapter by chapter, so you can get a flavor of what we'll be doing.
Right. So we have want to remind the listeners that at the 11:30 mark, we will have that meditation. So we actually have 39 minutes to go through the book.
Okay. I'll make it quick.
No, you don't. You have 39 minutes. I mean, you do what you can with that, because we have the meditation at the end. I just wanted to let you be aware of that. That's all.
Well, the best way to take our journey together is to envision an hourglass design. You know what an hourglass looks like, right?
Yeah, that thing that most people call it an egg timer.
Egg timer, yes. It's big at the top. It gets really tiny, and it goes into a little neck. And then that neck opens up into something that's big at the bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Think of our journey that way. We're going to start with at the top of the timer, and we'll end at the bottom of the timer. The top half of the timer is learning how to receive.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being have a very difficult time with it, 10 being, I love to receive. How would you rate yourself on the scale of 1 to 10 on receiving?
Right now I'm at a 9.
So you have no problem receiving whatsoever?
No, but I can remember times in my life where, I was below the 1. Because I at that stage of my life, I never thought I was deserving, I wasn't worthy and all of that. But because I have done the inner work and continue to do the inner work, and as I work with others, I'm also working on me. This is why I am at a 9 now.
Perfectly set up. Perfectly set up, because oftentimes, and for those listening in, for you listening right now, on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being you really struggle with receiving, and I'm talking about receiving just about anything, whether it's a bottle of water or a hug from a stranger or a hug from a loved one, where are you at with receiving? Score yourself, because your score will change by the end of our first half. The book is in two sections, learning how to receive and learning how to give. Each has 5 chapters. In the first chapter, we call it Who is Worth It, we look at the concrete world, our stuff world. You can touch it, taste it, see it, smell it, hear it. It's the stuff that 90% of our species judges us on. True?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What you wear, what you eat, who you're seen with, where you live, what you drive.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, would you say our species is really hung up on making judgments about all those things?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, as a public speaker, and I'm not sure whether you have experienced this over the years, Sol, but there are many times when I would get an evaluation, and before people would go into the content that I delivered, they spoke about my image first.
Mm-hmm.
Down to from my head to my toe. And I always say people have their priorities upside down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. First chapter, I want you to get in touch with your material world. What does it mean to you? Where is the material world in your sense of self-worth? Meaning, if your house burned down, if the place you lived in burned down or was blown away or washed away, what would that do to you in your life? Would you be totally destroyed? Would you be somewhat destroyed? Would you be like, okay, it was stuff. It can be replaced. Where would you be if a dear friend of yours, someone you thought you loved unconditionally, stole something from you? Where would you be? How would you feel? What would that do to you in your life? And the goal of chapter one is to have you become so grounded that no matter what happens to your physical world, fires, tornadoes, floods, betrayals, illness, no matter what happens, you have a perspective that, okay, I can pick up and move on. Yeah, you'll grieve. Yeah, you'll have some sad feelings. I'm not saying you need to be a Spock character. You have them. We all have emotions.
That's right.
I've met people who have suffered from the fate of Katrina. And to this day, they are still totally chaotic. They cannot continue life because everything that happened to them because of Katrina, and that's what, 20 years ago now?
Oh, is that long ago? Wow. My heavens, time
suffering.
Go by. Yes. And they're still sitting and mourning and, ooh.
So chapter one, what's your material worth? And we look at how your material world helps or blocks you being paid what you're worth fully. Okay, now that's the material world, the concrete world. Now we got to get into the non-concrete world, skills, the what are you worth? And it all boils down to skills. I read a fascinating article as I was researching this book. There was a study done by some Ivy League, I can never remember names, but I remember what the study was all about. And basically the study was about skills inventorying. You know skills inventorying, right?
Yes.
Okay. This particular academic postulated that had you reached the age 35 or you have at least one undergraduate degree, if you did a proper skills inventory, guess how many skills you should have, according to her? Just give me a ballpark number.
2,500.
Put two more zeros on that.
2,500. 25 million?
200 and... Her concept was, is you have at least a quarter of a million skills by age 35 or by the time you go through an undergraduate program.
Oh, 2,500. Okay.
250,000.
Thousand.
Quarter of a million. And people think, bull hockey. Wait a minute. Let's break it down. Dr. Daphne, in order for you to do what you're doing literally right now, how many skills, just ballparking it, how many skills do you estimate you need? And right now you're conducting a live radio show that's being broadcast around the world.
I have never documented that, and I really have to go look into that. But I know communication, listening, I need to be personable. I need to be attentive. I need to be happy. Oh, my God.
You're getting it, aren't you?
Yes. Oh, my heavens. I haven't even scratched the surface yet, but quite a few.
Let's put this in perspective to your average daily scenario. Doctor, I want you to pretend that you're sitting in front of me at my desk at a typical job interview. You have learned of a job that I have, and you think you're a pretty good fit for it, and we've just completed an interview where it's abundantly clear you're the perfect candidate for the job, and I want to hire you. So I've set the stage there. Let's do a quick role play. You game?
Yes.
All right. Dr. Daphne, it's abundantly clear that you are the person we need for this job. I'm so excited. How are you feeling?
I'm excited about it as well, Saul.
Now, based on what I've heard you say in your interview, it sounds like you're kind of in a tough spot in life, and you really need to get some income coming in right away, right? I mean, in this role play, listeners, I'm going to make some general assumptions. I'm not saying that this is what's happening in Dr. Daphne's life, but for most people who are out interviewing for a job, they're generally in a tough space. They need money coming in right away. True?
Yes.
Okay. But that may not necessarily be your case, but let's pretend it is. So, Dr. Daphne, I know you really want to get up and running, and you need to get started, like, as soon as possible, yes?
Yes.
Okay. Well, because I know you're in a hard place, and I know you, and we're kind of in a strengths position, I can afford to pay you $125,000, but because I know your story and I know you, I can use the power of my money over you, I'm only going to pay you $30,000 for the first year. Is that okay? And it's okay if you just forget all your skills and all the work you did to get to where you're at now. If you just forget all that, if you just let it go, you'll be happy with $30,000. Is that good for you?
Not really.
See where I'm going with this?
Yes. Yes.
Ladies
because,
and gentlemen, go for it.
Yeah, you know, right here and then, although it was a role-playing scenario, the minute you said that, immediately I felt devalued. And it put me in a place as if because you know what my needs are and you have more money on mine than I did, you were using your money to manipulate me. And that's what happened in everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
This is what is happening in the lives of people, and this is why people stay into dead end opportunities and lose out on all of their greatness.
By the end of chapter 2, you're going to be so profoundly aware of your worth from a skills inventory that's unlike anything you've taken before, that your vibration, your energy, your positive confidence, the people that you meet would be ashamed to offer you anything less than the maximum that they could offer you, whether that's money, respect, attention. You see where I'm going with this?
Yes, yes.
Where am I going with this?
Is that to help people to understand it's not all about money. We are a total package, and once you have everything in priority order, you have a clear perspective about the journey that you're on. You no longer settle in life. And for example, I want to piggyback on the interview that I just had for that position. When you have things in perspective and you know your self-worth, you have your values and things in order, you can get up and give a sturdy handshake and walk out of that place knowing that you will be okay and you will be provided for. And the minute you walk through that door, you know that that was not meant to be, although you thought it was meant to be.
Exactly. Chapter 2 is like a vaccine against abuse of all kinds.
Mm.
To me, when I meet people that I adore, when I meet people that are confident, when I meet people that know themselves so well, and I'm not talking an arrogant, egocentric sort of thing. I'm talking about those people who just know themselves. They radiate confidence and joy and ethical happiness.
Yeah, without
I'm
even verbalizing it.
I'm mm-hmm. inspired by them, right?
Yeah, exactly, without even verbalizing it, you know? What
yep.
they say, action speaks louder than words.
That's why animals, you know, they often say, if you're afraid of a dog, well, a dog will probably bite you, right?
Exactly. That you're attracting that, and he sees the fear, and he's not really biting you to hurt you. He's biting you because he don't want you to hurt him because you're so fearful. So he doesn't know what you might end up doing, right?
Take that same analogy. Human beings, sadly, take advantage of human beings.
Of course.
Who
yes.
allow themselves to be taken advantage of.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's last night I was doing a show and I was talking about, you know, don't be owned by stuff and don't let people own you either, you know?
Mm-hmm. So by the end of chapter two, you now have a profound sense of your physical world, your physical worth. You have a profound sense of your non-material world. We're now positioned in a spot where you're able to see yourself in ways you probably have forgotten about. I often use this example. I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I'll go into a store where I've shopped regularly and I know they have what I'm looking for and I know about where it is, but I go in there and I can't find it and I'm like, oh, where is this? And I'll ask a clerk and the clerk will laugh at me and then kind of like almost indefinitely point at it right in front of me, but I can't see it. Has that ever happened to you?
Closer to home, I have been walking around looking for a knife or a spoon while I'm holding it in my hand. So there you go, thinking that you are bad. Yeah.
Well, by the time we're done with chapters one and two, you know where stuff is. And you know it in such a way that no one's going to mess with you. Now, we get into chapter three, why are you worth it? Here we get into some ancient questions. And those ancient questions are, who am I and why am I here? When you get those questions, Dr. Daphne, who am I and why am I here? How fast can you come back with an answer?
Very, very, very quickly, because that's something you have to understand and focus on over your lifetime. And this is why I'm excited about this book and the work that we're going to be doing together, because it helps to help people to understand who they are. And we are not our jobs. We are not our careers. We are not our accolades. But when you strip yourself of all those things and you get to the core, who are you then and why are you here?
What we'll do in chapter three is we'll begin to pull together everything of the why are you here, because we've got our rudimentary ingredients, like a good cookbook. A lot of people have told me that the Pay Me What I'm Worth is like a good cookbook. To me, a good cookbook, the first thing it does is it lists the ingredients you need for whatever you're going to make, right?
Yes.
If it doesn't give you the ingredients, where do you start? Could you imagine a cookbook that didn't list any ingredients? It just went right into the instructions?
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't make any sense, especially for the nowadays cooks. You know, they don't know how to do it. Unless they're old school like me, you don't even need the instruction. You just go out there and create.
Here is an excellent example of how you set yourself up, doctor, to being devalued. Can I share why?
Yes.
Give me an example of something you cook or bake that you do without thinking twice.
Oh, boy. Everything I cook, because I don't cook from recipes. I just create. I take things out my refrigerator, and then I prepare it. So,
is that always the case?
Yeah, because I grew up poor in Jamaica. So my parents were farmers. So they harvest things from the farm, and they prepare it. So now people tell me, oh, why don't you do a cookbook? So now I'm jotting things down and creating the recipes and the portions. But I had a friend say to me one day, girl, you can make a gourmet meal out of rocks.
That
you know, so,
skill,
huh?
that skill that you take for granted because you've been working at it for decades, you generally will allow yourself to devalue because to you, it's easy. I've been doing this. Mm. No big deal.
Ouch.
Right?
Ouch. Ouch. That is so true because my normal is not what is normal to other people. Things that, oh, that's easy for me. It's not easy for other people.
I'm smiling from eye to eye right now. You just had that aha.
Oh, I just got a rude awakening, but it is a valuable one.
So if I hired you, if you were interviewing for a chef's position, and you came in and you were thinking that you're going to get that chef's position at $100,000 a year, but because of your interview and the way you carried yourself and the way you downplay all the hard work it took you to get to where you're at, and I, as an unscrupulous business owner, can take advantage of that, I would probably try and offer you a salary less than what I could pay you because I know you would take it.
Got you. Yes, yes, yes. This is good stuff. This is powerful stuff.
By the time you're done with chapter 3, no one, you will bounce away. And I've seen this because I've done this time and time again. It's like getting a flu shot. If you get a flu shot, you technically aren't supposed to get the flu. When you're getting done with, by the time you're done with chapter 3, and you've gone through chapters 1 and 2, your energy shifts. There's a part of your confidence that wakes up that people who are used to taking advantage of you, whether that's your time, your money, your reputation, your respect, your ethics, your love, whatever they're taking advantage of, they're going to get really uncomfortable with you because you're getting really uncomfortable with them because they're basically being a parasite in your life.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, chapter 4, let's get it pulled together. When are you worth it? Chapter 4, this is the most powerful chapter in pulling it all together such that we do what's called a worth timeline. And on this timeline, I have you take lots of paper, roll out a long piece of paper, and we chart out everything you've done in chapters 1, 2, and 3. And when you step back and you look at what you've put on that paper, you get that aha moment of where you allowed yourself to thrive and where you allowed yourself to get screwed. Would it be safe to say, Doctor, in your coaching practice, one of the things that you want people to see in their life is their themes?
Yes, I teach and I work with my client about thriving, not surviving, you know, which is similar to what you're saying here now.
When you see a pattern, which you just saw moments ago in yourself, you have that aha of a theme that you do, how you devalue yourself, right?
Yep.
When you get a grasp of those themes, you become very wise.
You become very wise, and I'm going to be very vulnerable right now and be honest. There were times when I got angry about it, angry at myself for allowing those things to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There were times when I was extremely angry. I said, man, I pound my fist, and I can't believe that I had allowed that to happen.
You mean you're human?
You know?
Oh, I got to end our call. If you're only human, I'm sorry, but... So by the time we get done with chapter 4, this is a workshop all by itself, but basically we pull it all together. You get to see how you got into the zone of abundance and good health and lots of love, and you can see how you kicked yourself out of that zone by things that you've already done. And I'm not necessarily a big one on hanging on to the past, but I think hanging on to the wisdom is important.
The wisdom
and
the experience and the lessons. You take those things out. It's like I look on that. When I look on the past, I take the experiences and the lessons, and I put them in a toolbox because it's not everything from the past you need. You just need the ones that will add value.
Exactly. So now we're getting down to that bottom part of the timer where it's narrowing down that hourglass design, narrowing down to where it's going to slip through and go to the bottom part. So chapter 5, How Worth Grows, what we're looking at there is getting you prepared to going from the world of looking just at yourself, getting your own house in order, getting ready to receive, to switching to the world, going out into the world, going out into everybody but you. And then in the next 5 chapters, what we're going to do is you're going to get ready to give. Now, at the top of this journey, Doctor, I asked you to score yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, your score on receiving, and you scored yourself about a 9, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, let's do the same thing on giving. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being hate giving, 10 being love giving, what's your score?
I am a 10.
Have you always been a 10?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it went back to the work I've done with myself and having the understanding of knowing what giving is about. And as I oftentimes tell people that there are times when you will plant a garden, and the place where you plant that garden is to bless someone or to bless a community. You might not be there to harvest anything from the garden, but you know deep within your heart that that was meant to happen, and you plant it and you move on to the next project. So I, over the years, I've came to the understanding about giving without expecting anything in return. I give because it's the right thing to do. I give because it enhances the receiver. It has nothing to do with me. I want to give a little example. There is a gentleman that I know, and we always embrace each other, and we kiss on the lips, mouth closed. And one day a woman said to me, "How can you two do that?" I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "You always hug such and such a person and you kiss on the lips." And I said, "We are both so secured in ourselves." And I said, "His wife is also secured in herself." I said, "It's purity. There is nothing obscene about what we do." So I said, "The issue is not in myself or the gentleman," and I call his name. "It is with you." I said, "What are your past experiences that would prevent you from embracing somebody that close and to kiss them on the lips?"
Good story. That's a good story. The reason why chapters 6 through 10 are formed the way they are is because, Doctor, I have seen time and time again where most people are very reluctant to receive, but they give and give and give and give with all sorts of expectations, all sorts of goals and dreams, and as you know, expectations burn us, true?
Yes, yes. We had that conversation when? Day before yesterday?
Yes. So in chapter 6, what we were looking at is how to give. You've heard this phrase, everybody's heard this phrase probably a bazillion times. You get what you pay for. You've heard that before, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When you hear those words, yeah, you get what you pay for, what comes to mind?
That it's cheap. Because based on experiences, people never make that statement when it's a high value, when they put a high value on the particular item. They always say that, make that statement when they are dissatisfied with the result.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is my experience. Somebody else might see it differently.
Is it safe to say that those words you get what you pay for come up when someone feels, like you were just saying, dissatisfied or screwed? Somebody's been screwed over?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Somebody's been taken advantage of?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's where we get into more of the mystical stuff within Pay Me What I'm Worth. I live my life, what goes around comes around, yeah?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Karma.
If I screw somebody over, somebody's going to, I open the door to somebody screwing me over, right?
That's right.
If I hire you as a chef where I could have paid you $100,000 a year and I only paid you $60,000 a year and you accepted it because you needed the job and I could save that $40,000 and do something else, there's a high likelihood that something's going to happen where that $40,000 is going to get used up.
Mm-hmm.
What
maybe
goes
quicker
around
than
comes around.
You expect.
So in Chapter 6, you get what you pay for, we do what I call a load of mental laundry.
Mm-hmm.
And in this mental laundry cycle, as anybody does laundry, when you do laundry, do you separate your clothes out based on certain things?
Yeah, certain colors and delicacy. Yes, we do.
Why do you do that?
Because I was taught to do that. I didn't make a choice. That was something my mother told me, and it just stayed with me.
Well, now that opens up a whole other topic, but for the large part
not
of it
is... Not a show for another time.
Exactly. But basically, most people separate out all whites, colors, and delicates, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We do that because, for whatever reason. Well, in this chapter, I look at three types of ways we open ourselves up to be taken advantage of and or take advantage of another person. The goal of Chapter 6 is to stop that. Do your laundry. End the being used or being abused. End it. And I show you how to do that in Chapter 6. Now that we've gotten rid of feeling used and abused or thinking that it's okay to use or abuse somebody else, in Chapter 7, we get into the larger perspective of pricing the priceless, because you see, okay, doctor, the term worth and pay, those two terms have multiple meanings, right? And those multiple meanings is the same thing with price. Price has other flavors. Price in the form of time. Price in the form of respect. Price in the form of integrity or ethics. Price in the form of love. It can also be penny, pounds, and peso, yeah?
Exactly.
In Chapter 7, I make the bold statement, every soul right now is paid what they're worth every single day.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think I say that?
I'm not sure.
When we stop and look at everything has a cost to it, I help you put your head around in Chapter 7, what's the difference between gratuity and gratitude? Is there a difference between gratuity and gratitude in your mind?
No, because gratuity comes off of grateful, because I'm grateful for, I'm generous in my gratuity for me.
We dive into that even more. I'm setting you up for our last chapter, which is called Gratitude Guidelines. But in a nutshell, in Chapter 7, I help you begin to see how much are you paying in the form of money, respect, time, health, reputation. How much are you paying to other people? And is that something you really want to continue to do?
Mm-hmm.
Be clear. Just simply be clear. To get a clean slate when it comes to valuing each other, in Chapter 8, we do a performance-based contract program. And you can actually do a performance-based contract in 4 words. So in
what are
chapter
the four
8,
words? Huh?
Oh, sorry. Mm-mm. You gotta take our class together to get to those 4 words, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry. But a lot of times people think of performance-based contracts are lengthy documents with a lot of here-tos and wherefores and there-ares, right?
Yes, yes.
Nope. We get it down to four words.
All right.
So that we
guess
set
what?
Up, what's that?
We have 4 minutes before meditation time.
Yes, and we will get there. Chapter 9, Ethics and Integrity. I help you unpack a very common myth around ethics and integrity and how it screws us up. Doctor, if I tell you that I am going to come to your house at 6 o'clock tonight and throw a brick through your front window, and I show up at 6 o'clock tonight and throw a brick through your front window, am I being an ethical person?
Well, I guess the answer is no. But there again, you said you were going to do it, so you follow through on what you say you were going to do. So how do you define ethics? Are you looking on the ethics of you delivering what you promised? Or are you looking on the ethics of throwing the brick through the window? I think it's a topic for discussion.
In Chapter 9, I help you understand that ethics are as simple as word equals deeds. Unfortunately, ethics, when you look the word up in most dictionaries, they sprinkle on this concept of morals. Ethics and morals are two different things. We can talk about that later. Last chapter, Gratitude Guidelines, sets us up for our guided journey now. Gratitude, to me, genuine gratitude. We talk about what genuine gratitude is. And this is the chapter that I actually wrote first. The last chapter of Pay Me What I'm Worth was the first chapter I actually channeled when I started putting this book together. Chapter 10, Links and Bridges to Chapter 1. Chapter 9, Links and Bridges to Chapter 2. Chapter 8, Links and Bridges to Chapter 3. They cross-pollinate each other. And to me, genuine gratitude is what you just already said earlier. Genuine gratitude is something done with no expectations at all. Right?
Yes.
Now, that's tricky to do. Most people score themselves low on the ability to receive because they have yet to understand what genuine gratitude is. So, doctor, if I show up in your life, and let's say you've known me for some time, and I show up in your life, and I start buttering you up. Oh, my God, doctor, you're such a great person. You do all these things, and I'm just laying it on. I'm buttering you up. Isn't there something inside you kind of going, what's going to happen?
Not anymore. But I used to be that way. I got suspicious, and I used to say, oh, you know, what they want now.
Well,
but
there's
now,
the key.
Because we live in such a technical digital world, I know you don't need to physically know me for a long time to know about what I'm doing. So my perspective on that has changed over the years.
And that's coming
and
a lot
I
of
can
hard work.
Honor, I can honor what you're saying about me.
That hard work is what we're going to be doing in our series. Before we get into the meditation, basically, on this site, you're going to have a link where you get to access a class that Dr. Daphne and I are going to be doing together. You can read more about it. But basically, genuine gratitude, people are naturally suspicious. People are naturally concerned that if they say yes to receiving something, does that mean there's an IOU down the road, right? Genuine gratitude has no IOUs.
That's right.
And we get into how to get into genuine gratitude in Chapter 10 so that you become a magnet. You become such a magnet to everything you just. I have been so blessed in ways that I couldn't even think of because I allow gratitude into my life.
Okay, We have a quick call. I know it's time for meditation. Well, I'm not saying it's quick. We have a call. I just want to take this call and respect this caller.
Please do.
Good morning, caller. Your last four digits are 9407. Would you please state your name and where you're calling from?
Lillian Caldwell, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Hello, Lillian. Thank you for taking the time to call in.
Oh, you're quite welcome. I was invited to call in by the host, Soul Dancer.
Okay. So do you have a comment or remark? We are just about to enter into meditation.
Oh, wow. No, I was invited to come in between 10 and 12, and I had to go to the dentist and have some emergency work done, so I guess I'm a
All
little
right,
too late.
All right, so we thank you for calling in, and
wait a second. Ladies and gentlemen, in the terms of being transparent, I asked Lillian to call in because Lillian has graced me with a large blessing, and she's key to what Dr. Daphne and I are up to. And in Lillian, just if you can, thank you for the moment. But I know you've gone through the book. If you were to sum up what you've experienced so far with Pay Me What I'm Worth, what would be a couple of key bullet points?
Self-confidence. Being responsible and accountable to yourself.
Mm. How has that made a difference in what you do?
It's made me appreciate who I am and what I'm worth, not only in my terms, but also in monetary terms. And frankly, so many people sell themselves cheaply.
Mm-hmm. And ladies and gentlemen, Lillian is also the president of PWR Network, which Daphne and I are looking to do something rather unique, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But Lillian, thank you for dialing in. I appreciate you hanging in there.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Thank you for calling, and I hope you'll join us in the meditation.
I certainly will.
Okay.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Before I go into the meditation, Dr. Daphne, thank you. Thank you, thank you for allowing me to be on your airwaves. Taking some deep breaths now. And Dr. Daphne, you might need to lower the volume on the audio that's being played through now. And then that way the people will be able to hear a little bit better. The goal of genuine gratitude is to be mindful of what we do have and let go of what we think we don't have. So taking a moment now, I invite you to just simply sit down and relax and take a few deep breaths. And in those deep breaths, just find yourself relaxing. So take a few minutes, just take a minute now and take a deep, deep breath and feel yourself relaxing. As you're finding yourself a little more relaxed, I invite you to focus on one thing in your life that you're grateful for. What's one thing you are truly grateful for? And as you focus on whatever that is that you're grateful for, let's dive in to everything that supports it. So the purpose of our time together to be grateful, let us focus on something as simple as a piece of clothing. Pick a piece of clothing that you're wearing right now.
As you think of a piece of clothing, I'm going to focus on something as simple as a shirt. And you might wonder, what does this have to do with gratitude? You're going to begin to find out in just a minute. So as you focus on your shirt, let's begin at the beginning of the creation of that shirt. I'm going to pretend that your shirt is made out of all cotton. Somewhere, someone had to plant the seeds of that cotton plant for that plant to grow the cotton to create that shirt. Do you know who that person is? Are you grateful for the person who planted the seed to create that shirt? Because if it weren't for that seed, you would have no shirt. As the cotton grew, someone harvested it. Who harvested it? Who milled it? Who spun it into the cloth? The cloth that was created to make that very shirt. I invite you to be grateful for every single person who helped create what it is that you are grateful for. And to do that, we now drip into something a little more creative. Everything that we have in life is because it's created by someone or something else. It's a rippling effect. So in your mind's eye now, begin to see a completely smooth, mirror-like pond. It's reflecting the sky, it's reflecting the clouds beautifully. Just a hint of a breeze, of a whisper of a breeze, touches the surface of the pond, and it causes the pond to ripple ever so slightly. Picture, if you will, you throwing a stone into the middle of the pond. That stone creates a splash and then ripples upon ripples upon ripples upon ripples upon ripples. Flash back to what you're most grateful now, whether that's a person, a creature, a place. Your gratitude for that person, that creature, that place, how has it rippled out into the rest of our world, the rest of your world, in the form of sharing a thank you, sharing a hug, sharing something of yourself that shows your gratitude. And we're going to begin showing that gratitude. First, imagine that you're the rock that's going into the pond. Imagine you diving into that pond. You are going to create those ripples. And before you do, you take a moment to look into a mirror. Imagine standing in front of your mirror, a mirror that you probably have stood in front of just about every morning for decades upon decades. You standing looking at yourself into your eyes in that mirror, preparing to take that dive into the lake. As you look into the mirror, as you look into your own eyes, as you see a reflection of you, what ripples of emotions begin to quake inside of you. If you have the chance to look at yourself in a mirror right now, I invite you to gaze into your own eyes. What feelings immediately bubble up inside you? And whatever those feelings are, I invite you to just observe them like you would observe a ripple on a lake rippling out to the shore. And if you've ever noticed, a ripple will go back to the center. Whatever the feelings you're feeling right now, when you imagine yourself looking at yourself in your own eyes, or you're actually standing in front of a mirror and you're looking at your own image, whatever those feelings are, I invite you to just observe them. No judgments. And for those of us who are gifted with the miracle of sight, when was the last time you were grateful for that miracle? Today, I invite you to look upon yourself as a miracle, just as you are right now, the sum of everything that's happened in your life. You are right now, and always will be, a miracle that's able to make a splash of gratitude with every sight, every sound, every touch, every taste, every smell. Our senses are miracles. So when I asked you to focus on one thing in the room or one thing in life that you're grateful for, would you like to change your selection? Another deep breath in, you beginning to feel true gratitude for the air that you just breathed. Our Mother Earth blesses us from the moment we come into this world to the moment we leave it with an abundance of air. How grateful are you for this air? Allow any guilt, any shame about how you may or may not have done something that has caused air to be less than pure. Let that go. That's not what we're talking about. If the doubt, the critic, the perfectionist, the judge in you is waking up right now, tell them to go back to sleep. Allow gratitude to be their pillow. As you feel the surface of the table, the chair, the floor, the ground, take a moment now to feel what you're touching. What are you physically connected to right now? Whether you're lying down, standing up, or seated, you're touching something. Take a moment to be mindful of what you're touching. And as you begin to become more aware of this connection to a floor, to a chair, to a table, to a wall, I invite you to take a quick fantasy ride with me
and expand out that connection. And just let your imagination run where you meet the chair or the floor, and the floor meets the ground, and the ground meets the house, and the house meets the neighborhood, and the neighborhood meets the city. And the city ripples into the state or province on a fantastic journey. Just very quickly feel your connection right now connected to something solid. It's connected into the earth. And if you dare, allow yourself to chase around the world and understand for a second, you, me, every person listening to this show, we are connected. When was the last time you allowed a connection to yourself and that which supports you, our planet, that you felt an immense amount of gratitude? It may have been smelling a rose, as they say, stopping for a moment to smell a rose. Was it a moment where you felt the grass, the green grass between your toes? Was it a moment you felt the sun on your skin as you took time to rest? Have you taken a moment in a hot, steamy bath to just breathe in the steam and feel the heat going into your body? That heat created by the very resources our planet gives us. Have you been grateful for those resources lately? Have you been grateful for the connections, all the connections lately? As you prepare to dive into the middle of that pond and create a splash of gratitude, I now invite you to imagine all the people that have come in and out of your life. Whether these people have been there for a millisecond, maybe you saw them walking down the street, or these people are people that have been part of your life since the day you've been born and you've been connected to them just about every day for most of your life. Think about the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people you've already connected with. And for a moment, just imagine that each person you've connected with wants you to live the most healthy, happy, loving life you're capable of having. Shift out any doubt in your mind that people are here to take advantage of you. Shift out in your mind any programming that people are here to be less than kind or compassionate. Shift that out. Allow that programming to fade for just a moment, as if the ripples on the pond slowly fades to stillness again. For gentle listeners, our species is wired to be unbelievably loving, compassionate, and kind. If that were not true, we would not be here. So being grateful for every connection, starting with yourself, starting with me, starting with Dr. Daphne, just let it ripple. And now you're diving into the middle of the pond and you're creating this big splash. The water is circling around you. And all of a sudden you begin to understand that you can breathe underwater. You're not going to drown. This pond is supporting you with enough oxygen for you to swim like a fish freely. You can feel the water swishing around you. You can feel like being in the breeze on land. You can feel your motion around you. What are you grateful for? As you begin to float back up to the surface of this pond, and you're lying, floating on your back, and you're just drifting on the pond, you're letting whatever forces in nature move you, whether that's a breeze or gravity, but it's just allowing you to float like a leaf floating down the stream. Are you grateful for the support for millions and millions of people? Are you grateful for the support of people you will never meet, who are right now working at a desk, doing a job that's part of the process of creating the shirt you're about to buy? Are you grateful for the soul toiling away in some field, creating the wells or the machinery that will one day produce the water that comes through your faucet or comes into your body through a bottle of water? Are you grateful for a mother who's working two different jobs to support her kids at substandard wages because you wanted to get the cheapest price at the cheapest discount store? Are you grateful for the people who have shown up in your life, who have taken advantage of you? Taking a deep breath, allow yourself the magic of gratitude such that every single person who has ever been part of your life has been a teacher. Now the question is, what kind of student have you chosen to be? When you meet people like Dr. Daphne, when you meet people like Dr. Maya Angelou, when you meet people like a local priest, rabbi, pastor, shaman, nun, when you meet people who are dedicated to being of service to help us become a more awake and aware and compassionate being, when you meet these people, how grateful are you for them? Is your gratitude limited to inconvenience? Or is your gratitude boundless that you will be inconvenienced to show your gratitude? Meaning you will share what you have to share in a responsible way, such that each person who is called to be of service, it never crosses your mind to take from them without giving something back. So with every show you hear where Dr. Daphne is sharing her experience, her life, her passion, every show you hear, Dynamic Daphne bringing to you expertise from around the world, will you be bothered enough to just leave a comment? Is there enough gratitude to leave a comment, let alone share something else? So with that journey, ladies and gentlemen, we begin to conclude, and I demonstrate my gratitude to Dr. Daphne for allowing me to be on her show today by sharing with her a very unique gift. And I will share that gift in the comment section just below the show notes. And in order for you to take advantage of that gratitude, you'll have to read it. Dr. Daphne, picture me bowing before you with great
Namaste.
Gratitude and a big smile. Namaste, yes.
Namaste to you, my brother, and for all of you who have listened and have participated in this time, this sacred time. Not only was the dialogue powerful, but this sacred time of meditation, I honor you, I thank you, and I show gratitude to you for coming back weeks and weeks for the past 6 years. I honor you, I thank you, and there are some new things that will be happening on this journey. So I encourage you to stay tuned. I encourage you to stay connected. If you have not yet done so, I want you to mark the show favorite. Follow me as a friend so you can be kept connected with everything that's happening each and every week. And as always, I have been telling you for the past 12 years that you have been called for a destiny, and this is just the beginning of another leg of your journey. So I want you to stay tuned, stay connected, and be sure to visit the comment section of this show. Thank you so much for investing your time, your wisdom, and your knowledge into this which I am called to do.
Mahalo nui loa. Aloha.
What's the plight that you've called me to? The thing I'm set aside to do. I trust you, Lord, to see me through. Will you let me look in your heart? Thank you.
about me. I just begin to say this by faith to the Lord. And I need you to grab it in your spirit and say this. Thank you for showing me and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord thank you for showing me. Hallelujah. And directing me. Speak to it. My destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for. Tell the Lord, thank you. Hallelujah. For every trial that came with this place. Hallelujah. For every struggle that came with this place. I'm mighty grateful. I said I'm mighty grateful. Feel it in your spirit. For showing me, I can sense my way through and directing me. I can almost see the breaking of day. It's destiny. Then I know what I know, what I know, what I'm here for. Yeah. Oh, for showing me to the Lord tonight and directing me. Hallelujah. To my destiny. Hallelujah. I know what I'm here for. Yes. He's a mighty God. He's a great God. He's a strong God. You may not be able to touch it right now. Begin to thank him. Begin to praise him. Begin to thank him. Begin to praise him. Begin to thank him. Begin to praise him. Hallelujah. Can you see it? Can you feel it? Everybody. You're going into a new dimension tonight. You'll never ever see it again the same way. You'll never ever touch it again the same way. You've been called with a great call. It's a monumental call. You've been called to change nations and generations. Come on and praise your God.